Hi, I'm Baby Doll Spank. You're listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. Buy my socks.
A 5, 6, 7, 8.
You are listening to the number one pop comedy podcast in the universe. Proudly sponsored by Adam and Eve. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour. A merciless fist ripping out the hearts of vampires throughout the world. And now turn your earballs to the screen. Here we go. Hello, friends and family, and welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. Thank you for tuning in to this little podcast coming to you from the interwebs, from the node of the multiverse that exists within my head and heart. I welcome you, bow to you, and invite you to allow me to penetrate your ear holes and fill your brain with the sound of my squeaky lesbian-like voice for the next hour or so. This one's coming out a little later than I usually put them out because I was an idiot and got drunk last night and woke up with a horrible hangover that felt like Satan was putting a cigarette out right in my frontal lobe. And it took me all day long to get to a place where I could actually communicate or talk or do anything. So that's what I get for drinking from the trough of idiocy that the powers that be have allowed us to drink from. It's one of the only legal intoxicants available to us compared to the multitude of wonderful illegal intoxicants that we can't have at all. If we swap beer with mushrooms for a week, we would be existing in a world where the roads were paved with putt-putt grass and people dressed like gnomes and rode miniature ponies to and from cottages delivering hemp handbags to each other. That's my idea of utopia, and but we're not there now. We exist in a world where one of the most popular pastimes in the evening is for lonely guys to skulk into dark bars, drink poison, and hope to have sex with a girl whose nervous system has been impaired by fermented wheat juice. Great, but there are sparks and rays and glimmers of hope, which is why I'm particularly excited about this podcast, because one of the number one philosophers and spiritualists who has influenced my life is Ram Dass. The story of Ram Dass is pretty incredible. He started off as a Harvard professor of psychology, became friends with Timothy Leary, started taking massive amounts of LSD and other psychedelics, began to experience these higher states of consciousness that didn't seem to fit into the Western model of how the mind works. And he basically wanted to figure out a way to, this is reducing it a little bit, but he wanted to figure out a way to stay high forever. Richard Alpert was noticing that you'd blast yourself with huge quantities of LSD and you experience these momentary revelations, but they fade away. And it's very difficult to maintain high states of consciousness like that. And he wanted to find out if there was a way that he could stay perpetually high, perpetually in a self-realized place. So he headed off to India. And he headed off to India with a bunch of LSD that was created by the legendary chemist at the time, Albert Owsley. His nickname's Bear. So when you see those dancing bears on the Grateful Dead vans, I don't think those vans even exist anymore, but the whole dancing bear thing, that was because Owsley funded the Grateful Dead with acid money. And it's a whole different story, but Jeff Conaway, Kanicki from Greece, once told me that Albert Owsley, and how he knew this, I don't know, but when Albert Owsley would go around delivering LSD, people would come out and actually bow down to him, because they thought of him as some kind of pharmacological saint, which maybe he was. I'd probably bow down to him if I could go back in time. If I had a time machine that was traveling back and I could go to any point in history or make a bunch of stops, one of those stops on my way back to watch the crucifixion of Jesus would be to drop by Albert Owsley's apartment and pick up some Albert Owsley LSD. Because imagine seeing the crucifixion of the Son of God while on acid. That would be incredible. Well, Alpert ended up wandering through India, and he came in contact with a realized being named Neem Karoli Baba, who is also called Maharaji. And Ram Dass spent some time with this person and then came back to the United States a spiritualist and as someone who had the Western model and the Eastern model and was incredibly talented at communicating the ephemeral, transcendent ideas that he had learned just from being in the presence of this enlightened being to a Western audience using words that we could understand. Here's an example. This is an amazing talk that he gave. Check this one out.
I think that the spiritual trip at this moment is not necessarily a cave in the Himalayas, but it's in relation to the technology that's existing. It's relation to where we're at. It's in relation to issues like pollution and political interests and activism and stuff like that. I think that's all part of one package now. The game is to be where you are, be it honestly and as consciously as you know how. When we were all with Maharaji, I decided, well, he keeps saying, tell the truth and don't get angry. But the truth is, I am angry. And I've spent so long being phony, like I love everyone. See, all the time my heart is full of anger. Okay? Oh, you're Ram Dass. Oh, yes, I love you. And all the time I'm thinking, I wish the hell I... And that hypocrisy was driving me up the walls. Okay? And I thought, gee, he said to tell the truth. I think for a change, I'll tell the truth. So people would come into my room, and I would say, get the hell out of this room, you lazy. You're too nice. You nauseate me. So I cut up a piece of apple into many pieces, and I went around and I looked each person into the eye. And I couldn't feed them the piece of apple until I was free of the anger, because to give somebody food with anger is like giving them poison, because the vibration gets transmitted. It's the opposite of healing, if you will. And I could feel that the thing that was between me and them at this point was my pride. The only game in town is the game of being, which includes both high and low. Anytime you push anything away, it's still there. The pile under the rug gets very big. Yeah. So it gets so that your downs are actually far out without being masochistic. Your downs turn out to be more interesting than your highs after a while. Because they're showing you where you are, where you aren't. Like I get into a depression. See? Or like I got angry tonight. I was fascinated by that. Far out. Look at how I came in being a holy man. I lost my cool. Far out. Isn't that great? I don't have any sense of social responsibility. I'm not trying to do good. I'm just doing my gig. If I were a bus driver, I'd be driving a bus. And I speak, so I speak. It's my thing. Everybody has their part in the drama. And no part is any better than any other part. They're just parts in the drama. Now, the issue of love. It's important that the distinction be made between the verb love, which takes an object, and the being, the state of being, which is love. You're afraid that if you don't try to be loving, you'll be awful. But the fact is that behind loving and awfulness, we are. And where we are is love.
So he's incredible. And so a few months ago, I reached out to his foundation, the Love Serve Remember Foundation, to see if I could volunteer and help them with anything. And I've been helping them put together a podcast, which we're currently working on right now, and it should be up within the next few weeks. And the person that I met there is Raghu Marcus, who is also a disciple of Neem Karoli Baba, and also had the incredible karma, luck, fortune, whatever it is you want to call it, to go to India and meet someone like this. And so I can't tell you how cool it was to spend an afternoon with Raghu Marcus, because when he left, the first thing that I thought was, man, you smoked too much weed. You got too high. And then I realized I hadn't smoked any marijuana with this guy. Just being around him was so intense and cool, and he emanates such a good vibe that it made me feel really, really, really high for several hours after he left. He's a super cool guy, and so please tune in and listen to the awesome conversation I had with Raghu Marcus. Namaste. See you all later. I love you very much. Go to DuncanTrussell.com. Buy one of my chaos posters. And to all of you who have been donating, bless you. Thank you so much for keeping this thing going. And to all of you who haven't donated, I love you too. Thanks for just listening. That's amazing. And to everyone who isn't listening right now, how are you hearing this? It's incredible. Please email me and let me know how you're tuning into my podcast if you aren't hearing it. To everyone else on the planet, I love you all very much. Keep planeting. Keep enjoying your time on this planet. Make sure that if there are any dark entities or vampires that have invaded your social circle, send them into the wilderness. You don't need them sticking their fangs deep into the heart of your heart and biting any good idea that's trying to be born there so that it mutates and turns into a bad idea and you get depressed. That being said, God bless you. And oh, before I forget, go to adamandeve.com. You get 50% off everything there. 50% off everything there. Think of that. And you get 3 free DVDs. How beautiful is that? 3 free antiquated artifacts that no one even uses anymore for their intended purpose, but which make great frat room coasters, I guess. And you could throw them at friends. Please go there, guys. It's 50%. Just buy some lube. You don't have to use it for sex. You could use lube for anything. If one of your children gets stuck in a pipe and you don't have lube around, then what are you going to do? You're going to have the kid's going to grow up in a pipe. You'll have a teenager stuck in that pipe and then an old man. It's going to be embarrassing when everyone comes over and asks why there's an old man stuck in a pipe in the wall. They're going to say, why don't you just lube him up and pull him out? 50% off the lube at adamandeve.com. Go there and do it. This will be the last Adam and Eve commercial I do if I don't sell enough of that stuff. Okay, that's it. Now, officially, the Duncan Trussell Family Hour bows deeply and lovingly and happily in the direction of the incredible, awesome, brilliant, and transcendent human being, Raghu Marcus.
Namaste.
It's, you know, so greetings, Raghu Marcus. Thank you so much for coming onto the Duncan Trussell Family Hour.
Happy to be here, Duncan.
I was just talking about a form of meditation I do, which I've talked about on this podcast a bunch, where I chant Nam-myoho Renge Kyo twice a day, which is a form of Nichiren Buddhism. And Raghu was just starting to talk about the type of chanting he does. And so let's get going. What's the deal, man?
Well, I was going to say that's pretty lonely, though. You're all by yourself. Chanting.
You gotta rub my face in it, don't you? It's this is the other thing I talk about every podcast is how I'm totally alone.
You're totally alone. So yeah, I'm suggesting, yeah, you get into it with, I mean, the bhakti yoga from India, the Hindu thing.
Yes.
Is all about a group of people getting together, and what they do is have one leader who chants some mantras, and then the group then responds. So it's call and response. And it gets very powerful if there's a bunch of people and you can ride that energy. And it is still the same practice, though. It's all about bringing your mind to one point. And then once you have that one pointed concentration, then your mind isn't into this discursive shit going on. Oh, boy, I got to go to the grocery store. Oh, where's my girlfriend? She hasn't called me yet. You know, right. It stops doing that.
Yes.
And then you can really get, then the mantra starts resounding in the middle of your chest, in the heart chakra, in the heart space. And once that happens, you know, it's a very moving experience and you start to feel where you haven't been feeling before.
What mantra do you chant at these
So
times?
It's all, you know, it's all, there are so many mantras from Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Sita Ram, Om Namah Shivaya, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. You know, the beauty of the whole Hindu thing is there's a god or a goddess for whatever your proclivity is. I mean, you may like, you know, the mother means a lot mm-hmm. to you. You may like the, you know, the idea of Shiva, the yogi sitting on top of the mountain. So, you know, you would, each family in India has a certain deity that is their chosen, what they call Ishta Devi, their chosen god. So, you know, it's the multitudes that they have. And, you know, we think from monotheistic point of view, that's crazy. And, of course, you know, Middle America, Christianity doesn't think very well of that stuff. But in reality, it's all an expression from the one. So it manifests in any way you want it. So it sounds pretty good to me.
Well, for sure. Yeah. You know, I've just been reading this book called Religion, Magic, and Marijuana, and it's talking about the sacramental use of marijuana in a lot of religions. And one big chapter is on Shaivites who smoke marijuana.
Absolutely, yeah. it's funny because Ali was just reminding me of, or telling me about this restaurant that she knows of. It a raw food restaurant, is it, or something? And it's called Alak, and it made me think, when I was in India, we get together with these sadhus, these Shaivite sadhus,
yes.
you know, and smoke these chillums,
yes.
which were, you know, it was like hash with herbs and all sorts of, and tobacco. It was a whole concoction and huge, huge cylindrical thing that once you took the first time I took a toke on that, I was laid out for about 3 hours. I mean, I couldn't move, you know what I'm saying? And, but they do not even touch the thing without saying the prayer first. And part of the prayer is this Alak Bom, Shiva drum, you know.
Alak Bom?
Alak Bom.
What's the rest of the prayer? Bom, do you know bom. Any more of it?
Hara Hara Mahadev.
Hara Hara Mahadev, Alak Bom.
Yeah,
that's what you say before you smoke marijuana.
Absolutely.
Say it again.
Alak Bom, Hara Hara Mahadev.
All right, that's great. You know, when I was in India, the one time I went, me and a friend of mine, Emil, we were staying in this hotel very close to the Ganges River in Varanasi, and we had heard about bong lassis. And so we told the people at the hotel, you know, we want a bong lassi because we were going to take a boat out on the Ganges River and we wanted to get high first. And so they made this yogurt drink for us, and we didn't even, I still, like now I would never do this, but I was in college and we weren't even thinking about it. So we just slurped the whole thing down, not asking how potent it was, not thinking about it, you know, just did it. And then we went out on that river, and it would, the experience was, it's one of my favorite types of experience, but it was quite terrifying. It's the sense of, well, you've just gone way over your head here, man. And you weren't even thinking about it, but you've gone into the deep water here. This isn't just some, you know, vacation thing.
Yeah, right. No,
you
know? Vacation. No.
Yeah, it was, you know, people ringing bells and fire rising up from the bodies being cremated and monkeys running on the roof. And that sense that hangs over that river of, like, you just walked into the middle of a story that you barely understand. You just walked into something that would take you maybe forever to really comprehend.
Well, they call that river in that spot in Benares the end of the world, because that's where people go to die. And all of life is happening, right, on that river, from clothes washing to prayers to babies being Christian.
To babies floating down the...
Blessed and all that.
To babies' bodies floating down.
To bodies that can't get completely burned. You know, all of it's happening down on that river. I did the same thing as you when I went to Benares the first time. I went with my friend, and we drank a bong lassi, right? And went down, and stood, went right to the burning gods.
Yes.
And we were there all, I remember thinking, the first time I took a whiff, I go, Jesus, smells like my parents' barbecue in the yeah. back a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's a little sweeter. And then I'm like, and I'm really whacked, you know, and I'm yeah. going, this is too much. And we sat there all day and watched body after body being burned
yeah.
and went through, you know, a trip and a half to, obviously. But the difference was that we had maybe 6 months before that, we had been in India about 8 months, and 6 months before that, this friend of mine and I had actually met together in the Himalayas, and we had met Neem Karoli Baba, the guru, Ram Dass's
yes.
guru, my guru, and we had a context for everything that we were experiencing, so it made things a little bit easier to digest down there. That's a pretty, I would never send anybody there by themselves.
No, it's definitely a intense place. But can you tell me about that meeting, the first time you met him?
Well, there was a series of events that I won't go into, it would take too long, but basically met him because I was a program director of a radio station in Montreal. And they asked me to help promote his lecture there, and so I didn't know who he was, but when I found out he was Richard Alpert and Tim Leary, I was like, okay,
right.
You know, love those guys. So I said, send me over a previous lecture on tape, and they sent it over, and I just was completely, like in the moment, freed from the culture.
Now you're talking about a Ram Dass lecture.
This is
you were listening to a Ram Dass. Okay, so yeah. you so to put it in context, you're working in a radio station and yeah. you start hearing for the first time the philosophy that Ram Dass Alpert had transmitted to him from Maharaji.
Well, what I was listening to was his story of
right.
you know, he was, you know, at Harvard, met Leary, did the acid experiments,
yeah.
got fired, and did so much psychedelics to get... He wanted to know, you know, I want the answer. I want to know the map. That was the best word he used. What is the map of consciousness?
Right.
What is this about? What are we doing here? I want someone to tell me. And he thought he'd get it through acid, but he only could go so far with it, and it came up empty in the end. So he went to India to try and find it out. And he eventually was taken to this realized being in the middle of the Himalayas, and he was transformed within 6 months, and he came back as Ram Dass.
And you met this realized being yourself.
So after meeting Ram Dass, I said, look, I want to, you know, and hearing his take on transformation and reality, which made the only sense to me for being in this world, I said, I want to go there, and I got to meet him. Well, he don't know where he is. He's not so easy to meet. You can't. And I said, I don't care. I'm going to India. So I went to India, actually met an Indian woman who took me to India. And the next thing I knew, I was, after a few months of not finding him, I found him through Ram Dass. And what was it like? The best word I can use to describe that first meeting with this being was, holy shit, I have known this guy forever.
Yeah.
It's all in my DNA. I can feel it in my molecules forever before, you know, I had a good feeling about reincarnation. I mean, it wasn't tremendously experiential, but it was experiential enough so that when I met him, I understood that. And I understood that this had been happening over a loop of time that was beyond my mind, beyond any
yeah.
kind of rationality from then through now and into the future. And I was like, so the big word was home. It was like, okay.
Yeah.
And I my whole body relaxed in that moment. And then I thought, oh, that's what Ram Dass was about. Had nothing to do with him. He was just a carny, really, for this. And
yeah.
he was just the vibe that I had felt from him and his transformation and everything. That's what was behind all of this.
Right.
You know, and I sat down, and the first thing, and I was sitting next to a woman from Montreal, where I was from,
yeah,
who was the girlfriend of one of the DJs that I had hired at the radio station. I had no idea she was coming
wow.
to India whatsoever.
Strange.
She's sitting next to me, and the first thing, he looks at the both of us and goes, are you friends from Canada? That
wow.
was the first thing he said. And then I realized, okay, there's no use. The mind, I can't think about anything, and I let that go, and that was the beginning of the end of anything. I mean, for the rest of my life, that was it. So, yeah, home is the best way.
You know, the that word, home, that word that you're talking about. See, I know exactly what you're talking about when you say that, because times that I have been fortunate enough to be in the presence of someone who was very advanced, or been in the presence of a group of people engaged in like real spiritual activity, the feeling I always get is that exact feeling. Feels like home.
Yeah.
But it's an odd feeling because many of us don't come from great homes. So it's a weird thing, because when I think back, it's like, how does this, I don't know what this home is like, but this feels like a family, and it feels like home. And the other, strangely, my mind always goes to Christmas. I always think this reminds me of like Christmas when you were with a family sitting around, you know, it's a very strange thing, but this idea of Maharaji, or the story of Maharaji, the stories, I've read so many about him. Again and again, there's this kind of telepathy that seems that people talk about. He seemed to be telepathic or be able to...
No, a being like this, there are very few beings like this. I mean, many people talk about gurus and saints and all of this, and there are many different levels of consciousness where, you can have... I had my mind read by sadhus walking on the streets in India all the time. Right. They had that power. This was beyond that. This was a being that they call in India, it's called an avadut. What that means is somebody who is not living in duality. They're actually living on the formless plane, and the only thing that keeps them in the body is the love of the devotee. So when a being is in that state, they have access to everything. There is nothing miraculous. They are part of the fabric of how this universe is. They just are. It's just an isness. When I saw him that first time, it was like, I saw, fuck, there's nobody there. This is not somebody you can, that it's a one-way street. It's like a something that's just doing the right thing to get us where we needed to go. He wasn't deciding, I'm going to go get Raghu. He's the program director of a radio station in Montreal, and he'll broadcast this shit all over the place. It was nothing. It was just a combination of the isness of everything, and my past, my karma had brought me to this point and ripened to the point where I was able to receive this, period. You know, it was nothing more or less. The best way I can describe it, other than home, is... There was another guy that came. His name is Larry Brilliant. He was part of starting Seva, this big service organization with Ram Dass. And, you know, he was...
Seva for blind kids? Or?
Yeah, they treat blindness around the world. It's one of their projects. But Larry was also Steve Jobs' best friend.
Wow.
And Steve Jobs went to India and met... Maharaji, missed him by 1 week. He went there right after. Yeah, and he stayed at the ashram. Steve Jobs. Yeah,
Jobs.
Yeah, died. Yeah, when he died, Miracle of Love, Ram Dass's book about Maharaji was on, and Be Here Now. We're on his bedside.
Wow,
and he was totally into it. And Larry was his best friend. So when Larry went to India, his wife got him there. Right. And Larry's a doctor, and he helped to eradicate smallpox in India after that. I mean, Maharaji got him to do that. But basically, he was not into gurus or anything like that. It was all weird to him, and he wasn't into it. And he came because his wife forced him, and he came, and he sat there, and he goes, I don't want to touch these feet. What is this? Devotion, bhakti? I'm not into any of it. And he said, okay, I'm going to get divorced because my wife is so into it. What am I going to do?
Right.
And he was near the town near, and he was on a boat on the lake, and he was really despondent. And he said to himself, shit, I'm going to leave. You got to help. If there's somebody up there, you got to help me.
Yeah.
Then he goes back the next day, and Maharaji says to him, were you out boating last night? He says, yeah. Yeah, were you fishing at all? No, not fishing. No. He said, were you asking God to help you? And then Larry fell apart.
Wow.
Now, who could know such a thing? And then after that, months after that, he said the best thing about this whole experience, and it's really what this world is all about as far as I'm concerned. He said the miracle wasn't that Maharaji loved me or did these miracles on me. That's his job. You know, that was his job description.
Right.
The miracle was I loved everybody around me. Wow. That was the miracle.
Yeah.
So it comes back to an overused word. Way you talk about home
yeah.
being maybe the wrong word. But that love that we had, unconditional love, is really what it was about. And when I first met him, I just sunk right into that. And that's a release. When you know you don't have to do anything, that is coming at you free. There is nothing that, it's not like a boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, mother, even your mother.
Yeah.
When you're a kid, there's still some qualifications.
Sure.
This was free, and we had never experienced that. And that's what Ram Dass brought back and said, I had never experienced unconditional love before. So that's what it was about.
And that idea is in, that's one of the things that I love so much about Ram Dass's writings and the philosophy, because it's this forgiving philosophy. There's no guilt in it. It's this, what it does for you is it gives you this, all the hang-ups and all the baggage and all the things that we cling to that make us feel like monsters or demons. He is an exorcist for those things, and it's just that you realize that those aren't, anything that you thought was so awful about you isn't terrible at all. Right. And that's what transforms
right.
it.
Right.
It's not, the transformation doesn't come from someone being like, you shouldn't do that because it makes the Lord angry. The transformation comes from, yeah, you're doing that. Guess what? Well, people do a lot of stuff and this is your karma right now. Just keep doing it. But right. with mindfulness, and then it kind of, it seems to, that's what makes the activity.
When you start to have an open heart and give a shit about other people and not just yourself,
yeah.
and you are, you know, use certain practices to make you more aware and more mindful about and your life and the things that you do, and you're not stuck to these thoughts
yeah.
that come up for everyone. And that's why Ram Dass was great, because he was very honest about his stuff. You know, he was not hiding anything, and he shared it with people, and they go, okay, if he can get through that, I guess I can get through that as well. It's all okay.
Yeah.
There is nothing. You do not. It is useless to have guilt. There's nothing. It's all okay.
Yeah.
Relax. And so we got that. And so one of the biggest things I could say about, you know, all these years since, you know, doing this work on myself, is that I just don't take my stuff as seriously.
Right.
I am not as caught in it. I am not following those thoughts as fiercely as I was before. They are not sticking. I am not identifying myself by my thoughts. I'm identifying myself by that home place as much as I can.
Right.
You know, and that's why when we go back to the whole thing, we talked about chant and doing it with a group.
Yes.
That group supports that rather than the bullshit that we have, you know, that passes between us.
Well, there's so many people out there listening to this right now who aren't lucky like I am, in the sense that I actually am getting to talk to someone who met someone like that. They're scattered through the multiverse and they don't have a group of people. They don't even know where to, a lot of people out there don't even know the first step to take if they want to start experiencing this home feeling or getting closer to their heart chakra. What do you do? How does someone just start? If someone just wants to, what can someone do right now at this moment who's listening to this if they want to start taking the first steps in this direction?
Well, first of all, start hanging out with people that are interested in this direction. Start there. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that goes on in any community. You know, obviously, around yoga and yoga studios, and there's chanting in these yoga studios, and there's people who, you know, we are still in America, so a lot of this yoga stuff is about, you know, looking pretty and meeting, you know, the next girlfriend, boyfriend.
Yes.
So, but that's just natural, and that's part of it. It's okay. But there are substantial people that do want to get their hearts open, don't want to be so caught by their minds, you know, so having some common experience with other people and sharing that way is important. Meditation, getting a grip on your mind so you're not, you know, your monkey mind isn't got it all over you, you know. So we were led to, in those days, a particular practice which I advise anybody to do, and it's called Vipassana meditation. And it is a Southern Buddhist meditation, and it is easy to do because you're just using your natural in and out breath, mm-hmm. and you're getting one pointed through that. And that's a start to get a grasp of not allowing your mind to take you over. So that's important. One pointedness is important. Sharing with people is important. And in the tradition that I come from, and, you know, I've been in music my whole life as a profession as well as yes. just a joy. So, Krishnadas, who's the chant guy around.
The best.
He and I have done this just for ourselves yes. way before he put his first record out on the record company that we had together. So I do love music as a vehicle, and it is an easy way. Chanting and mantra are an easy way to get one-pointed and open your heart.
So let's talk about them. What are the steps of Vipassana?
Vipassana is the name. We can put some stuff on the website if you like, and okay. certainly give you a there are several people that have centers around the United States, and it's taught everywhere,
right.
this Vipassana meditation. Sharon Salzberg is one. Jack Kornfield is a fantastic teacher in California, in the Bay Area, and you can just go up on their sites, and you should be able to give that on your website and
sure.
give those links, and people can go. They're anywhere from 3-day to 10-day courses.
All right.
And once you take one of these things, you will get a grip on your mind.
Someone told me about this, actually, and said the exact same thing that you're saying, is that you know, I tried to do a meditation retreat once when I was studying Zen Buddhism, and I made it through, what do they call those? Sashins?
Yeah, yeah.
I made it through a day and a half and was like, I am out of here.
The top of the heap. That's where, you know, that's the most difficult meditation because it's on nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and this gives you a way to grasp how to deal with your mind.
Right.
Vipassana. You know, I mean, and it's not just that. I mean, that's the one I'm just sharing you
sure.
with you, the one that we, I mean, Maharaji used to say to us, he'd call it in English, he'd go, you go into the course? And we knew he meant the Vipassana course
because wow.
we were all going. All of us ended up there. He didn't, it's like he didn't tell us to do anything. All he did was feed us and loved us, you know, and said, you know, gave us obviously nuggets of wisdom, you know, but coming from non-duality, he's not a teacher. He didn't teach us anything, you know.
Right.
But somehow we all ended up at this course. And then I go to the course and we come back and we'd done a 10-day meditation course. He said, so what'd you learn there? Did you learn how to meditate? Show me. And then we'd all get into these postures, that upright postures. We're going to meditate. Closed
yeah.
our eyes. And then suddenly we hear these high-pealing squeals of laughter. Look, they're meditating. Yeah. So there was nothing that we could take seriously. But we all did end up doing Vipassana.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it was the most effective method to get one-pointed and stop being in the grip of the monkey mind.
The monkey mind. It's the worst. Last night I was going to bed, and right as I was going to bed, do you ever get in like imaginary fights with people, like in your mind, where all of a sudden you're like in a big, long fight and no one's even there?
Yeah.
You know, I got in a fight last night, right before I went to bed, an imaginary fight. And then this morning I woke up still in the imaginary fight, but there's nothing. It's the why do our minds do this? It's like, what's happened? You know, it reminds me of when you see a power line in a puddle kind of skipping around. Why are our minds doing this? Is this some failure of evolution? Are our brains malfunctioning? Is this because the neocortex is too advanced and the rest of the reptile brain isn't catching up? What's the problem?
I haven't the slightest idea, but Buddha did say anemic to everything and is suffering, and here's the way to get out of it. So, you know, I haven't the slightest. But basically, our identification is with our ego.
Yes.
Right. So you're identifying that person who you're having some trouble with and you want to beat the living shit out of.
Yeah.
You're identifying with that part of you that's very angry, uptight, and wants retribution.
Yes.
Yes. So the idea is that eventually through work, it takes a lot of work, you're realizing that you are not that person, and you are the person who has compassion, and as His Holiness the Dalai Lama would say, you know, it's for the perpetrator that you have to pray for, not the victim, because that perpetrator is going to whirl for lifetimes in the most awful of circumstances.
Wow. So right. Wow. So you're yeah. So
I'm not saying I'm there either. By the way, I have plenty of shadow boxing going on. So, you know.
Shadow boxing. It's so ridiculous. But this this idea of identification with the mind. Mm-hmm.
Not an idea, it's a reality.
This reality of our, right. This the reality of our identification with our thought patterns or ourself. There seems to be a fear that I've experienced. The more, I mean, we're talking because I wanted to deepen my meditation practice and because I contacted you guys because we are, because I have had the good fortune of being able to help Ram Dass with a Ram Dass has a podcast coming out. I haven't talked about this yet. Mm. Ram Dass has a podcast coming out soon. Can I talk about it?
Yeah.
Ram Dass has a podcast coming out soon. And I contacted them because I thought, well, pretty much everything that I know that has really gotten me into meditation or that has really pushed me into deeper parts of myself has come purely from reading Be Here Now, from reading Grist for the Mill. That's the thing that just really hit home for me. One predominant theme in a lot of the stories that I've heard from you and from Ram Dass, well, obviously from Richard Alpert, is LSD. And what you mentioned, using LSD to try to reach this place and always having to come back. My favorite story is the story of Richard Alpert actually gave Maharaji LSD at one point. Twice, no effect. How's that possible?
Well, now you're asking me to sort of say, how does the universe work?
Right.
And I don't know. But my surmisal is that a being like this, being that is not living in time and space,
right.
Okay, is not having anything affected, is not having their frontal lobes affected by any outside thing whatsoever. Now, the body is still subject to disease and death, obviously, as
right.
a body. But actually, these beings can also convert their bodies. They don't do it. I've heard of a couple that of this stature of Neem Karoli Baba that did do it. And there was, you know, I mean, we met one who was 150 years old, and we met around that time in India. We met him. He was of that stature. Deohora Baba was his name. And so I, you know, just intuitively, nothing is going on there. You in putting something in, you're not. There's no reaction going on because there's no being in time and space. He is not living in time and space. When we sat with him, suddenly we weren't living in time. There, you have no mental collection of where you are, what time is it, what's the season. None of that is going on. You're totally in the moment by being brought. He brings you into that moment by the force of that power. Just brings you into that moment, and then you know. So you're just swimming in an essence of a something. That's what's going on. So I can't see him getting stoned.
Can anybody go into that place? Can anybody become Maharaji? Can anybody reach someone living, let's say somebody living in the West, in the United States? Is it possible to reach that level in this life?
Yeah, according to the Tibetans, absolutely. How many, you know, the being that is ready to go into that place at any moment in time is, you can be in America, you can be in India, you can be in Tibet. Obviously in the East they have a way to support these kinds of people, you know, in their culture, so it makes it quite a bit different than here, which maybe, you know, it's not you can't cultivate that here as well, can we, with
no.
what we got going on
well
here,
you
right?
you would be I mean part of me thinks that you would be hospitalized. People would
yeah.
think you'd have some
and
sort
I'm
of
sure
breakdown.
That happens, absolutely happens, instead of nurtured and so on. But a being like this is beyond that. I you know, Ram Dass was asked recently, gee, is there anybody like that in India right now? And he went, you know, I don't know of anybody. Now there's beings that don't come out publicly that
right.
are there in the Himalayas. and some people may come by them. And there certainly are beings that are living. I mean, what the depth of that realization is, in this particular case, what they've said about Maharaji just being a bodhisattva, basically, it's that level. And there, you know, and there are other people in Ram Dass's book, Be Loved Now.
Yes.
He gives a description of what that is, what that realized being is. It's called a siddha, an accomplished being. So in that book are some very good descriptions, and using Maharaji as an example, but other beings that lived in the last century, it might help to answer some of that question. I don't know if you've read that book, but
I did. I did read that book. And whenever I read stuff like that, I so want to believe it, but the skeptical part of my brain kicks in. I read it, and whatever the skeptical part of my brain, I always think, I don't know. But my one experience getting to meet Ram Dass, I did, he does, I don't know if he still does it, but at the time he was doing this thing called Heart to Heart, where you'd get to do,
he still does that.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it. On his website, I mean, because this is like, for me,
I forgot you did that.
He's like the Beatles or something for me. So the idea of getting to talk to him was already, I thought, there's no way this is real. Can't work. Signed up for it. Then got the email back. Okay, you're scheduled for this time. Then that time came and I got a phone call. And it's like, Duncan, this is Ram Dass. And it was beyond, I can't even explain what that feeling was like. And then suddenly he was on my computer screen talking to me. And you can't fake what he's doing. There's no way you could fake it. Whatever that is, was going through the interwebs into my apartment in Echo Park. In the entire apartment, it was like it was just glowing with light from getting to talk to him. You can't fake it. So coming in contact with it is, to me, much, much more important than reading about it. Because you read about it, and you're like, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Well, reading about it sometimes just gets you to the place you're curious and you want to find out more. And you want to get there. But the problem with reading about it on any level or thinking about it, it's impossible. So when you ask some of these questions about, you know, how could, you know, is there other beings? Can you just be like Maharaji?
Yeah.
Who would have the faintest idea about any of that stuff? And I never think about it. And I only think about the things I think. I mean, this is personal. I'm saying the things that I think about are, this great thing happened to me.
Yes.
Okay. And I want to honor it. I want to honor that this great thing happened, and you can call it, you know, the in India, it would be called grace. They understand it as suddenly a being like this looks at you and just looks at you.
Yes.
And then suddenly you're receiving.
Yes.
I want to just honor that, and by being, you know, as free as I can be of, you know, greed, anger, attachment, you know?
Yeah.
I just want, that would be, to me, I would honor that. And to do that is to open up more and more. And the more you do that, the more you become that. And it doesn't necessarily going to be the level of a being like this who is, you know, doing miraculous things. Yeah. And, you know, there are beings walking around that are just living in the moment.
Right.
And being compassionate to other people. Yes, many of them do end up teaching in some way. You know, but it doesn't. So it's happening. It's all happening. You sitting here and talking to me right now, and asking to have a heart to heart with Ram Dass. Your karma is just ripening, and it's happening.
Right.
It's happening to you. What you're asking about, does it happen? It's happening to you. You just got to get out of time and space. That's all.
Oh, I just have to get out of time and space. Yeah. No problem. This has been. I have to tell you, this is of all the podcasts I've ever done. This has been the favorite podcast I've ever done. And people are going to have a ton of questions for you. And they're going to have a ton of questions that I'm not going to be able to answer. How can somebody get into this? How can someone connect with Ram Dass, connect with you?
They should do what you did. You did the thing. You joined the satsang, right?
Yes.
You went in, you took advantage of Ram Dass's webcast, where his retreats are. You found a way to talk to him one-on-one through the heart-to-heart.
Yep.
And then you, and there's retreats as well, you know. People go over there. That's, you know.
Oh, yeah. He has, and I always want to do it. I haven't done it yet. In fact, I'm kind of terrified of the idea of doing it, but he has retreats in Hawaii.
Yeah, terrifying of going to Hawaii?
I know. But it's the same thing as like going out on the Ganges on a, after eating a bong lassi. I know it must be like super intense out there.
No. Super great. Just yeah, out there on the beach and in the sun. The whales are going by because it's December. You know, it's just absolutely phenomenal. And you just completely let go. And because the fun thing about it for us too is there's a bunch of us that go with Ram Dass,
right?
Who are in India in those days. You know, Krishnadas, who's the chant guy.
Yep.
And I go and some other people. And this teacher I just told you about, Sharon Salzberg.
Yes.
Who is one of the greatest meditation teachers that I've experienced. She's a good friend, and she is helping so many people. She's there, and she's got incredible talks about how to deal with the shit you're talking about. So the whole thing is just, you just sink into it for 5 days, and it's an incredible experience. I mean, every time I go, I was like, wow, this is unbelievable.
When's the next one?
Yeah, December 5th through 10th. And then there's one in the spring, May 2nd through 8th.
That's coming up. Is there room in there still for people?
Yep, there's room for people.
May 2nd through the 8th.
May 2nd through 8th. And that's more, that takes you on a pilgrimage through Maui with Ram Dass.
Wow.
So that's a whole other incredible adventure.
I love Maui.
Hey, this is great. This is like my radio days. When I met Ram Dass, I did the same thing that you just did. I pulled him on the air and I did this exact same interview with him.
Well, maybe I'll end up in Hawaii in May. That could be a good field trip for the Duncan Trussell Family Forum. May. We'll talk about it. What's the Ram Dass website?
Ramdass.org.
Ramdass.org.
And you get there and you can navigate through however you want to go. You can join the community, which is called the Satsang. It's all supported by people like you. We've been, you know, this foundation is just there to support what he's doing and what all of us have gotten from Neem Karoli Bama, period.
So go there, my dear friends. Thank you so much for giving me your time.
Thank you.
Bye.
Sri Krishna Govinda Hare. Murare, he Nadana.